It's the Marketplace Tech Podcast for Thursday the 20th. I'm Ben Johnson in New York. Today, Amazon is expected to do something unusual: raise prices instead of cutting them. New memberships for its Amazon Prime service will go from $79 to $99 a year. Prime customers use it for a break on shipping and for watching Amazon's video content. Will the hike hurt the company's bottom line, though? Marketplace's Dan Weissman reports.
In a survey, about 40% of Amazon Prime customers told consumer intelligence research partners that, yeah, they might ditch the service if the price went up 20 bucks. Josh Levitz, who runs the research group, doesn't believe them. He says Prime is still a good deal. Free shipping plus the video streaming and word of more to come, like maybe free streaming music.
In fact, we think that when people make the $99 commitment to Amazon Prime, they're probably going to become even better Amazon customers because they want to get their money's worth out of the shipping.
Which could be the real problem for Amazon. That's how Colin Gillis at BGC Partners sees it. He points out that Amazon already loses billions of dollars a year on shipping, and those losses are growing fast.
If you look at their shipping losses, it's about 4.7% of total revenue. And that's about the margin that a decent retailer makes.
Worst case, Amazon becomes a big-scale version of an old joke. Oh, sure, I lose a penny on each one, but I sell a zillion of them. In Chicago, I'm Dan Weissman for Marketplace.
This week, Viacom settled a long-standing lawsuit with Google over claims of copyright infringement. The mass media company sued YouTube back in 2007, saying that it was a venue for users to post Viacom show content, like SpongeBob SquarePants, and that it violated copyright laws. But YouTube has fallen back on part of the 1998 Digital Millennium Copyright Act. It's called Safe Harbor. And the idea is, if you're a website like YouTube, as long as you pull down infringements of your users, you can't really be held accountable. Julie Ahrens is the director of copyright and fair use at Stanford Center for Internet and Society. She says Safe Harbor has been really important to the internet as we know it.
This Safe Harbor is key to the kind of activity that we see and love on the web, you know, and everyone is very used to, whether it's Facebook or YouTube, Twitter. Without these safe harbors, they literally could not exist.
But if you're breathing a sigh of relief right now that you can still upload your mashups of South Park to YouTube, don't be too happy. Aaron says the settlement, the specifics of which were not disclosed, means there's still a lot we don't know about how these kinds of cases will shake out in the future.
The fact that that is still gray causes a lot of risk, particularly for startup companies or for innovation, you know, and if you're going into this space, like, well, what do I have to do to insulate myself from liability if what I'm wanting my company or my business to be on the web is user content and user-generated content?
The good news for YouTube, says Ahrens, is that in the years since 2007, companies like Viacom are sometimes softening their opinion about this sort of thing, because it turns out blowing up on YouTube can be good for promotion and good for business. Our discovery of a wide-ranging surveillance program designed and carried out by the U.S. government is unprecedented. But to one particular group, some of the details we've learned in the last year have felt familiar. I'm talking about the Church Committee, named for its chair, Senator Frank Church. The committee was formed in 1975 to investigate possible abuse by U.S. intelligence agencies. Our friend Cyrus Farivar of Ars Technica has been looking at efforts to revive the committee. Hi, Cyrus.
Hey, how's it going?
It's going well. Give us a little bit of a history lesson here. The Church Committee.
This was actually before I was born. I was born in 1982. But in 1975, the Church Committee was convened at the behest of the U.S. Senate to investigate a possible national security investigation and intelligence overreach.
Was the work of this committee important to policy? I mean, did it have an impact?
one of the most tangible things that the Church Committee created was this whole FISA system that we are talking about with increasing frequency now. FISA, of course, is the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, which created in turn the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court. This is this, of course, secret court that's gotten a lot of new attention in the wake of the Snowden disclosures in recent months. And, you know, President Obama in recent weeks has talked about reforming how the FISA court does business.
Okay, so the Church Committee published an open letter to the president, to Congress, and the public. What does the letter say?
So they called for this new Church Committee for the 21st century, looking at ongoing intelligence gathering programs and practices. But also they made the really interesting point saying that what the intelligence community today is doing, in their words, dwarfs what they were looking at in the 1970s.
And they were looking at things like phone tapping residences, trailing people, things like that. And they're sort of reacting to just the broad scope of the technology being leveraged today.
Exactly. Typically in those days, people had one phone at a fixed location, their office, their home. Nowadays, nearly all of us carry around mobile phones in our pockets, which act as a really good proxy for showing where we are, when we are in time, and as that information is retained by our cellular carriers, the government can go to them and say, hey, you know, where was this person, a week ago? So I think that that's really incredible to see these veterans of looking at some of these abuses from, 40 years ago, saying now that what's going on today is far worse than what they saw previously.
Cyrus Farivar, senior business editor at the website Ars Technica. Cyrus, thank you, man.
My pleasure.
That's it for us today. I'm Ben Johnson, and that's Marketplace Tech. This is APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.